Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We'll remind you all that you can weigh in, let your voice be heard every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. on WKAR AM 870 by following me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. Want to hear what's on your mind. Of course, you know you can give us a ring right here at Current Sports by calling 517-355-9527. Again, hope you all had a splendid weekend. It was certainly a good one, a hot one, to tell you the truth. I played 18 holes yesterday, pretty fun stuff, and it was scorching hot, though. I got about 5 shades darker out there in the sun, but it was definitely a fun time. Golf game is improving, looking good. So before we dive into all of the action that happened over the weekend, to kick off this week, we open dialogue about a topic that has gained a lot of discussion due to its rising popularity throughout time. Now, 2004 is when the trend started, so to speak. It started to gain a ton of momentum due to the creation of Facebook. Yes, we can all thank a man by the name of Mark Zuckerberg for the picture posting and status updates, but then came the world of Twitter 2 years later, allowing anyone, to share their thoughts to the world in a way that is rapid, instant, and in some ways informative. Now, the question we pose on today's show is how the use of these social networking sites fit into the world of sports and the athletes that use them. Should an athlete be allowed to say whatever he or she wants to say on Twitter or Facebook, just like most of the population, like you and I? That's the question we pose to you guys, and we want to hear your thoughts on this. If you go to facebook.com/currentsports, leave a post on our Facebook page, on our wall, or you can tweet me at almartinwkar.org, and we will read your response to that question. Again, should an athlete be allowed to say whatever he or she wants to say on social networking sites like Twitter or Facebook, just like you and I? Now, what is considered crossing the line when you talk about posting? We're going to dive into all of these aspects today, and we're going to open up the discussion by inviting a guest who knows about these regulations quite well when it comes to sports, especially at Michigan State. She is a representative from Michigan State University's Office of Compliance Services. It's great to have Jennifer Smith with us on Current Sports. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So, Jennifer, first off, because I had no idea what the duty of a compliance office is until I had to do a little research. First off, please explain to the people what the duty of Michigan State's compliance services are.
Well, our primary function is really to educate student athletes, boosters, administration, anyone who has contact with our student athletes. Our responsibility is to educate them on the NCAA rules, what they can and can't do, and then the repercussions if they don't do what they're supposed to do. And then also our office obviously handles all the investigations into NCAA rules, and then we do all the self-reporting when a violation does occur. So really the primary focus is the rules ed, because the rules do change constantly. Mm-hmm. There are so many of them, and we just try to keep the coaches, mostly the coaches, administration, the student athletes up to date on what they can and can't do.
Now, Jennifer, now honing in, because like I said, we want to focus today when it comes to social media and athletes, because it seems to be a constant place of dilemma when it comes to athletes when they tweet certain things or Facebook certain things. Now, what are the rules when it comes to a Michigan State athlete and their use of social media?
Well, there's kind of two different prongs to that question. The first one is, what are the NCAA rules? And there's certain NCAA rules that what they can and can't do, like coaches on Facebook. They can't friend or email certain age prospects until they're, you know, contactable age, and that's different for a number of sports. They can't go on Twitter. Student athletes can't go on Twitter and promote businesses, just like they couldn't do commercials. So there's the NCAA aspect of it, and then there's also what we have, it's called our conduct standards, but we ask our student athletes to do, to make sure that they understand that they are representing Michigan State and it's a privilege, and they shouldn't be posting inappropriate videos or comments, offensive language, and those type of things on their Twitter and Facebook accounts. But those aren't NCAA rules. Those mm-hmm. are more of like the social norm, kind of our conduct standards that we have.
Now, is it mandatory, Jennifer, for these athletes to allow you all to see what they post? Because I know on certain settings on Facebook and Twitter, you can block certain people or you can hide your page from certain people. Is it in these rules, is it mandatory for athletes to allow you guys to look at that content?
No, it's not. It's not mandated by the NCAA, and we don't, as an institution, we don't require it. Now, there are some teams that require it. Some coaches require it of their teams. And each team has their own team rules, and they can be as strict or as lenient as they want in that regard. But we do not mandate that we follow them.
Gotcha. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Jennifer Smith. She is a representative from the from Michigan State University's Office of Compliance Services. So, Jennifer, let's look into the punishments and repercussions if they do break these rules concerning social media. What are the punishments?
It depends. If it's an NCAA rule, then there are specific guidelines that we have to follow. So if someone endorses a commercial product on Twitter, that actually renders the student-athlete ineligible. We have to say that it's reported as a violation and then ask for their reinstatement. If, for example, a student makes an offensive remark, the coach may say, you're off Twitter for 2 weeks, or, you know, you need to shut down your Twitter forever. It just depends on if it's an NCAA offense or if it's just a team rule or against the conduct standard that we have.
Gotcha. Now, Jennifer, taking a step back, in your own personal opinion, do you think an athlete should have a leash on when it comes to posting on social media websites?
I think they just need to be a little bit more cognitive than the general public, because they are role models. They put themselves out as role models, and so I think they do need to watch what they put on there, and they are representing, you know, the university, so they need to be cognizant of that.
Now, Jennifer, you've worked with, of course, you're at MSU's Office of Compliance Services, and you've seen some of these cases, firsthand. Just give us some examples of what have happened. You don't have to name the athlete, of course, and not put anybody on blast, but what are some certain things you've seen on these websites posted and, that have gained some punishment from those postings?
Well, we've had, as far as NCAA rules, we've had a lot of times where the student-athletes will endorse a friend's product or put out there that they went somewhere and, were doing some things. Definitely have had student-athletes post pictures on Facebook that their parents probably wouldn't want their parents to see. So I think, and we've had, Twitter comments about maybe some ladies on campus, things like that. So
Right. That's
when the coaches step in and say, this is not something you need to be posting. And then the NCAA rules, obviously, we have to have them take it down. And then we have to tell them that, now you've violated an NCAA rule and you're ineligible until we can, get it fixed, for lack of a better word. So
when you talk about being ineligible, they can't play in a game.
Correct.
They can't practice. They can't do any of that.
They can practice. They just cannot compete.
They cannot compete.
Correct.
Gotcha. All right. So Jennifer, now once restricted or ineligible, so to say, have you seen certain athletes create quote unquote fake pages with their name not attached? They can still be active on Twitter and Facebook?
I have not seen that. I mean, we have some of our student athletes with some pretty funky names that you most likely wouldn't pick up that's who it was. But in my experience, I've never had someone, once they're banned, do a fake page that I know of.
Gotcha. Ladies and gents, we're talking with Jennifer Smith. She is a representative from Michigan State University's Office of Compliance Services. And anyone out there listening, we're posing the question, should an athlete be allowed to say whatever he or she wants to say on Twitter or Facebook, just like most of us out here in the population? And we're talking with Jennifer Smith again from the Office of Compliance Services at Michigan State University. Now, in what ways, Jennifer, looking on the flip side of this, in what ways do you see social media being used positively from athletes at MSU?
Well, I think a lot of times they may have their own causes that they tweet about or they have on Facebook. The Adrian Payne story with the local girl who had cancer, putting a lot of those things on Twitter. Any academic achievements, student-athletes who are trying to get a Rhodes Scholar, Rhodes Scholarship, those type of things, they can promote those types of things on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Facebook, and they also, some of the lesser-known sports, there's a lot of those Facebook pages and student-athletes, they can kind of garner some additional attention for their sport if it's done positively.
Gotcha. Now, dealing with compliance, the compliance office as a whole, do you think the NCAA is too strict in certain regards or not strict enough, Jennifer?
I don't know if it's a matter of being too strict. I just know that there's a lot of rules, and a lot of them don't make a lot of sense. So some of them just need to be deregulated so that it makes everyone's life a little bit easier. But I don't know if they're too – I mean, there's definitely some that are too strict, but most of them that are like that just were put in, you know, 20 years ago and just haven't been changed and can't keep up with technology because the rule process – is so slow. Technology moves much faster than the rules do, so you're kind of handcuffed every once in a while because, you know, Twitter comes along, Bind comes along, and the rules don't apply to those type of situations anymore. So I'd like to see a lot of the rules deregulated.
Right now, Jennifer, over time, when you look at Facebook and Twitter and the way it's used by athletes, and there's been a lot of athletes who have gotten in trouble at MSU and beyond, even in the professional sports world and other colleges. It's been a constant thing. Do you see, as far as this trend goes, of posting certain things that are not representative well of a university or that team or organization, do you see this trend getting better? Do you see athletes kind of holding back a little bit and starting to become more aware of that and not posting certain things? Or do you see this kind of escalating and constantly being a problem in the future?
I think it's escalating and it's going to constantly be a problem.
And why is that?
I just don't think that sometimes people in general realize when they're posting these things that the whole world is seeing them. I think sometimes they get positive feedback from what they're posting, so it just, you know, makes it easier to post again. And I just think that the student athletes coming up and they're used to it, and it's their way of communicating, and so I don't think that that's going to go away.
I really don't either. I think it's going to constantly escalate as well. I echo those sentiments, Jennifer. Now, something interesting, this plays right up into this conversation, Jennifer, because if you look at this weekend, and of course a lot of individuals talking about the Trayvon Martin case, and to see so many athletes, there were so many athletes expressing their opinion through social media, especially Twitter, after the verdict was read, that George Zimmerman was going to be a free man. And now a lot of them were negative. Falcons wide receiver Roddy White, for example, was particularly vocal, advising the jurors to, quote, kill themselves. He said in a tweet, quote, all them jurors should go home tonight and kill themselves for letting grown men get away with killing a kid, end quote. How would MSU compliance services deal with that if an MSU athlete tweeted those things, Jennifer?
I think that our office would just notify the athletic director, who would probably, because Mark Hollis is so savvy with Twitter and that type of thing, I think it would go directly to his office, and he would probably deal with the student athlete directly, and I'm sure that it would be taken down.
Gotcha.
My guess.
Very true. I think the same. All right, Jennifer, I think someone has a question for you. I hope I say this. Please correct me if I get this name wrong. Is it Apache on line one?
Apache, thank you.
Apache, thanks a lot for calling me. Go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Here's my question to your guests, and thanks for coming on. When you discover unethical or illegal behavior on a part of, for example, the coaching staff, and you go through the necessary chain of command, but you don't get what you think is a just result, a fair result, is it then ethical, in your opinion, to use Twitter to expose such behavior, such as it has happened in the last few months on some major programs at the university level here in the United States? Could you please answer that? Thank you.
That's a tough one because we, a lot of times, when we do an investigation, we do it with not just the athletic department, it's the faculty athletic rep. And then at most schools, including here, I have an outside line to our general counsel's office. So there's a lot of outside athletics also looking at the problem. So there's really rarely a chance for, you know, a cover-up or anything like that. So when you find something with a coach and you report it, you know, we don't report that out to, you know, the media or to other schools. It's done, you know, that's done internally with the NCAA. And the punishment is usually determined by the NCAA. I mean, we put forth a recommendation based on case precedent because there's usually other cases that are the same. So once that once that conclusion comes back from the NCAA, they'll tell us whether or not they think that that punishment was okay, or we need to be more strict, or, you know, it's over with and it's done and it's fine with what we did. So as far as using Twitter to expose it, I mean, I don't know if those people are privy to the investigation to know that it has been dealt with. And, you know, Twitter is just, it's not anything official or anything by anyone. So it'd be hard to say that that would be okay to do. I mean, I'm not sure if I answered his question.
Yeah, well, for me personally, I mean, when you look at, you know, Twitter and posting something on Twitter to expose something as really detailed and really, the word I want to use is escaping right now. But to expose that area that's so touchy, if you will, I don't know if Twitter would be the right venue to do that. I guess through an email or a press release, but I don't know about Twitter because Twitter's more of an informal way of doing things. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know if you should post something like that on Twitter, but Pat, thanks for the call. Really, really appreciate that. And if any of you out there have a question for Jennifer, you can give us a call here at 517-355-9527. And you talked about Mark Hollis, Michigan State's athletic director. He was actually a guest on the show on Friday, Jennifer. And with him, if you follow Mark on Twitter, he is very, very active. Do you think having a guy who's on Twitter all the time and on Facebook and on social media very avidly like Mark is, does that make the athletes around Michigan State's campus kind of think twice about what they post as well?
I would think so, because he does take an active role, and he will talk to student-athletes personally. If he, I know he follows a lot of student-athletes, and when he does see something that he thinks is questionable, or he'll contact that student directly and talk to them about it. So I think they're very aware of that. They're very aware of his activity. So
now, Jennifer, I'm sure you know this, but talking with Tom Izzo, is very, he's anti-social media. I think anti-internet in general. Do you think Tom will ever, ever get on Twitter?
No.
And why is that?
Based on my personal experience with Twitter and Tom, he will never, ever use Twitter.
And why is that?
He just thinks it's going to be the downfall of American society, I think.
Very, very true. Well, Jennifer, any final thoughts? Again, we're talking with Jennifer. She's a representative from Michigan State University's Office of Compliance Services. Any final thoughts from you, Jennifer?
No, I just hope that our student-athletes do use Twitter and Facebook positively and, you know, represent Michigan State and their teams and use it in a positive manner, because, you know, it just goes so far even beyond here. College, you know, grad school programs look at those things and employers look at those things, and it just needs to be used positively to help them in the future, and I'm not so sure they think about that at this point. So that's really what we try to educate them on.
Again, we want to encourage you all. We're posing the question, should an athlete be allowed to say whatever he or she wants to say on Twitter or Facebook? You can leave us a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. We will read your responses live on the air. Again, we just finished talking with Jennifer, representative from Michigan State University's Office of Compliance Services. Jennifer Smith, thanks so much for joining us right here on Current Sports.
Thank you.
No problem. No problem. Again, leave us a comment. Jennifer Smith, she was great. Again, let your voice be heard. 517-355-9527. Hit us up on Facebook. Tweet me. We want to hear what's on your mind, your thoughts about that. So stay tuned. More Current Sports is next.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Coming up on Here and Now, the Pittsburgh Pirates have had 20 straight losing seasons, but heading into the All-Star break, they have one of the best records in baseball. We'll look at how smart investing could help them end that long losing streak. And can American parents learn anything from moms and dads in Japan? Coming up on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Still 2-2 to Alonso.
Posey's thinking. I got pretty good wood on that one. Do I throw it again? Do I throw the split?
High in the air and catchable. Blanco. It's a no-hitter for Tim Lincecum.
Speaking of a show, back.
Oh, oh my goodness.
Everything.
This is just for all of us to see.
Thank you, Prince. My goodness. Five swings, five homers. In that swing off, Prince was king.
I think you got the fans on his side. No one's booing there.
This one is on its way to Wichita. This time he's hitting for the American League, and this one is way up there, a skyscraper! Oh! The fountains are going off!
I'm going to lay it in there for him.
Oh, he did that one! Yes. That gold ball is way gone!
Oh! Oh. We got a Hall of Famer!
Meanwhile, look at this shot by Prince! Way back! Yep, that's Pop, and that'll do it. Prince Fielder is the winner of the State Farm 2012 Home Run Derby.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished talking with Jennifer Smith. She is a representative from Michigan State University's Office of Compliance Services. And again, today we're posing the question whether or not athletes should be able to post anything that's on their mind, anything they want, just like the general population does on Facebook and Twitter, or should it be regulated by some form of organization, franchise, team, etc. We want to hear what's on your mind with that. So give us a call and you can express your opinion by calling 517-355-9527, or you can leave us a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or tweet me at almartinwkar.org. We want to really dive into this, and while you guys are leaving your comments, we're going to dive into our current sports section of the show. As you just heard, tonight is the Home Run Derby. Always a fun time. Last year, as you just heard, we played some bites of Prince Fielder of the Detroit Tigers taking home the hardware after he had an impressive outing. So can he do it again is the question. We're going to talk about that. I am also joined right now by intern Mike Corey and production assistant Matt Lucky as we go through all of the action that happened over the weekend in the world of sports. A lot to talk about, including the Detroit Tigers. As the MLB All-Star break is upon us, of course, and the Tigers closed out the final, the first half of the season, with a 2-1 series win over the Texas Rangers. Now, they topped the Rangers 5-0 yesterday as Justin Verlander looked like JV. He pitched his most impressive performance of the season. Verlander, who is now 10-6, he allowed just one hit, almost a no-hitter, ladies and gents. One hit and 3 walks over 7 innings. He struck out 3. JV had it going. And I really thought, looking at that game, that he was going to get the no-hitter. But, you know, he got a hit late on him. Now, Verlander, he fell 7 outs short of his third career no-hitter. Verlander, he no-hit Toronto on May 7th of 2011. And his other no-hitter came June 12th, 2007, against Milwaukee. Now, Verlander left the game after the 7th with a tight right quad muscle, having allowed just 1 hit and 3 walks. Also in that game, want to note that Torii Hunter, Victor Martinez, and Johnny Peralta hit solo homers off of Texas starter Martin Perez, and the Rangers finished with 2 hits. Now, yesterday's outing lowered JV's ERA to 3.50, and Verlander was picked for the AL All-Star team, but was replaced for Tuesday night's event. And because of that, under baseball's labor contract, pitchers who start on the Sunday before the All-Star game may opt not to participate. So you won't see JV on the mound. And Leland said that Anibal Sanchez will start Friday at Kansas City in the first game after the All-Star break, followed by JV, Doug Fister, Max Scherzer, who has been unbelievable this season, and Rick Porcello. Now, Verlander took the mound 12 hours after San Francisco's Tim Lincecum. He finished a no-hitter of his own at San Diego, which we'll talk about in just a sec. Now, here's Torii Hunter just talking about Justin Verlander's very, very impressive outing. You got to hear this.
We try not to think about it, but every once in a while you look up, you're like, man, he has a no-hitter. Then you say, oh, don't think about it. You know, you try to think about 1 potato, 2 potato, 3 potato. You know, you think about anything else but that no-hitter. And he went out, man. He hit his spots. He had those guys off balance and made some good plays behind them and try to preserve that no-hitter. But, you know, they got the double in the seventh, and that was that.
Yeah, and that seventh inning is when things really set in that Justin Verlander was not going to get that double, that no hitter, excuse me. And Justin Verlander, he was so close, and a lot of people, just crossing their fingers during that game against Texas yesterday. Here's Verlander on his play.
You don't really lose focus. It's just you gotta. I mean, I've been there before, you know, where I've lost him in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. And, so I guess I've not become accustomed to it. But, you know, you learn to just refocus and, just get the next guy. That's all you can do.
Yes, that's all you can do. So that was Justin Verlander on his impressive outing. So close to getting a no-hitter. But you know who did get a no-hitter? Yes, Tim Lincecum, the 2-time Cy Young Award winner, threw his first no-hitter, his first one, on Saturday night against the Padres in San Diego. Lincecum recorded a season-high 13 strikeouts, 13, and threw a career-high 148 pitches in the 9-0 victory. Tim actually was at 138 pitches to start the ninth, but manager Bruce Bochy let him get the job done. Bochy said, quote, "He wouldn't have talked to me the rest of the year if I'd taken him out." And I'm sure he wouldn't have. Lincecum was potentially headed to the bullpen this year after some rocky outings. Now, he had not recorded an out in the 8th inning of any start this season, but it was just one of those days where he was certainly in a zone. Guys, did you watch at all any of JV's outing or Tim Lincecum's outing over the weekend? Two impressive pitching outings, guy.
Well, I know Verlander didn't get the no-hitter, but it's just good to see him having a quality start, having a quality outing. You know, we've talked a lot this season about how he's struggled, and maybe Scherzer has kind of picked up the torch as the ace of the clubhouse. But, yeah, you know, if he's getting things going, and, you know, obviously we're heading into the All-Star break here, but if he can kind of set himself up for a dominant second half, I think you can see the Tigers really make some moves. And if he's at the top of his game, I think that raises everybody else's game, and it only bodes well for the Tigers. And I caught a little bit of Lincecum, and, you know, I'm still mad that he cut his hair because I liked it when he
I loved it.
I
loved
the flow, but he got rid of the flow. But you know, it's impressive to see him whenever he's out there because he's just this average-looking guy, but he just throws bullets. And finally, I feel like it's overdue for him to get a no-no.
Oh, definitely. I mean, in 13, you're talking about 13 strikeouts.
And 150 pitches almost.
That is beyond impressive.
And he didn't ice his arm afterwards.
Right. That's crazy. I don't know.
He is a freak.
It's not just the freak was definitely a freak of nature on Saturday. And, you know, when you look at Justin Verlander for me, guys, from a confidence perspective, for JV to come out and have the outing that he did yesterday was truly something he needed, I think, because it looks sometimes out there when you look at JV this season that he just didn't seem to say he was engaged or confident out there on the plate with the pitches he was throwing. But to go out there and get an outing like that Sunday was something that truly he needed to get his mind right, I think, because he has not been great this season. Let's face it, Max Scherzer has, without a doubt, been the best pitcher on the Tigers roster. And, you know, JV has historically been known as that guy. I mean, arguably the best pitcher in the game right now, the best pitcher of our era right now. And to see him struggle really has a lot of people puzzled. But, you know, that game yesterday was kind of reassurance that, hey, I'm still Justin Verlander. I can go out there and get the job done when I'm on top of my game. So we'll see if he can duplicate that.
Absolutely. And plus, you know, he saves himself from a week of, oh, what happened to you, Justin? What's wrong with Justin Verlander?
Right.
You know, all through this All-Star break, because that would be a story probably. But he gets this outing. He looks great. Business as usual. So now he can go enjoy the All-Star break and hopefully come back refreshed for the second half.
Yeah.
Very, very true.
It's just a reminder, because this isn't something we've really seen all year because of the way he's struggled a bit. But it's a reminder that any time he takes the mound, there's always a chance that he could throw a no-hitter.
Right.
It was like that reminder during his MVP season where you just got excited when you took the mound because at any moment he could throw a no-no, and we haven't seen it at all.
Right.
And he definitely needed this.
Definitely.
And I feel like because of this, he's going to come out strong in the second half of the season.
Right. And like I said, this would be very interesting to see how he pitches from this point on, you know, because this is definitely a confidence booster, like I said. But at the same time, can he duplicate this type? It doesn't have to, of course, he's not going to go out there and pitch like this every single outing. But if he can get a consistent range going where he's out there and being consistent at the mound, then that will definitely bode well for the Tigers. So the Tigers, they finished the first half of the season 52-42 in first place of the AL Central, leading the Cleveland Indians by 1.5 games. All right, Chris Davis, who's also a freak of nature. Baltimore Orioles first baseman Chris Davis, he homered his way into history Sunday, cracking his 37th home run of the season with a 7-4 win over the Blue Jays. His total now equals Reggie Jackson's 1969 AL record for the most homers before the All-Star break. Now, the record is 39, set by Barry Bonds back in 2001. And Davis said, quote, "I think it's something definitely to be proud of. It means I've been doing my job, but it also speaks volumes about the guys in front of me getting on base and really swinging the bats well." Now, Davis is in the midst of a true breakout season, already notching career highs in home runs and RBIs with 66 games left in the season. Unbelievable. And he'll take center stage Monday night as one of the favorites in this year's Home Run Derby, which, of course, is Pick'em Monday, so we will definitely be picking. Then this is so difficult, too, to try to pick a winner in the Home Run Derby. We were just sitting here before the show just racking our brains. But Chris Davis is definitely the favorite, I'm sure, with what he's done so far this season as far as home runs are concerned. But he'll be competing tonight as one of the favorites in this year's Home Run Derby. Look forward to seeing that. Chris Davis has certainly been on the roll. Also note, the John Deere Classic. At the John Deere Classic, Jordan Spieth. Spieth? Do you guys know? Names get me, man. I hate this. Jordan S.
There you go.
He's 19, though. 19. He became the youngest player to win a PGA Tour event in 82 years yesterday. Now, he did it by surviving a 5-hole sudden-death playoff with defending champion Zach Johnson and David Hearn. Now, he became the youngest winner since 19-year-old Ralph Galdon. Galdo, another name. Are you killing me with the names today? Ralph was 19 as well. He won the Santa Monica Open in 1931. Now, he got into the playoff when he holed a bunker shot in the final hole of regulation that he called, quote, "the luckiest shot I've ever hit in my life. If you haven't seen it, you got to YouTube it and look at the highlights. He heads to the British Open now as a full-fledged PGA Tour member with a two-year exemption. He's also eligible for the season-ending playoffs, and he collected a first prize check, really nice check, of $828,000, guys. Did you guys catch Ralph's outing at all? 19. He's young. It's like you're eight. How old are you?
I'm 21.
Oh, wow. About. He's younger than all of us. Yeah. Just...
I'm wondering, I didn't catch any of it, but my thoughts are, you're 19. What do you do with 800 grand?
That's a nice...
Yeah, I remember when I won my first PGA Tour event. The check was
nowhere near that.
800 grand, but...
That's unbelievable, man. That's a lot of money. So he's 19, just collected a really nice check. He'll be competing in the British Open, which starts this Thursday. So also want to note that Phil Mickelson, he won the Scottish Open on Sunday with a final round 3-under par 69 plus a playoff hole with South African Brandon Grace. Now Mickelson held off Grace by one in Scotland after he birdied the first playoff hole and Grace parred it. Now, when needing a par on the 72nd hole, Phil Mickelson did his best Phil Mickelson impression. I thought he was going to collapse. We've seen Phil Mickelson collapse so many times in the clutch, and I was sitting there saying, okay, here we go again. Phil's about to just blow this thing again, and he three-putted from 20 feet for bogey to put himself into the playoff with Grace, who had already finished. Now, he ended up getting the job done, but really, guys, I'm sitting there like, why does Phil always do this? When he needs to just close the thing out and stop with the drama and just let's go home. But he always does that. It's just Phil Mickelson.
He wants the viewers, man. He wants to keep people.
Maybe that's what it is.
Don't change the channel, guys.
Maybe that's what it was. He definitely had me hooked. I was actually listening to that a little bit on the radio when it was going on. But the win is Mickelson's first in Europe since 1993 when he won the the Tournoi Pierre de Paris in France. Well, I was struggling with that too. The Tortillo Pierre de Paris. That's a tournament out in France. Though his eighth European Tour victory. So Phil Mickelson is definitely making some noise as the British comes around on Thursday, which would be very interesting. And you get two playoff wins. It was a great weekend to watch golf, I tell you that. So, all right, down to Brian Vickers. Victory Lane at New Hampshire Motor Speedway showcased Brian Vickers on Sunday. The part-time Michael Waltrip Racing Hire won the race in his number 55 car. Kyle Busch led most of the way, but Tony Stewart took the lead in lap 203. Vickers proved strong enough to chase him down for the lead at lap 287. Now, Stewart actually ran out of gas on the final restart and ended up finishing 26th. And the final finish featured Kyle Busch in second, Jeff Burton in third, Brad Keselowski, he finished fourth, and Eric Almirola, who we had on the show, I believe, last month, he came in fifth. Now, Jimmy Johnson, five-time Cup champion, pumped his fist out of the window for his close friend with the win. Now, Vickers snapped a 75-race winless streak and hadn't won since August of 2009 at Michigan. Also want to note history being made. During that race, as Morgan Shepherd, 71 years old, Shepherd took the wheel of the number 52 Toyota and became the oldest driver to start a race in NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. He says, quote, "When I start hitting the wall or something, then maybe it's time to get out. I'm here as long as the Lord wants me to be. I'm here to encourage people to get off the couch and do something with their life." 71 years old, guys. So we have a 19-year-old who comes through with a huge PGA Tour victory. And then we have a 71-year-old making history racing in the NASCAR Sprint Cup. Wow.
Yeah, guys, get off your couches and go race 200 miles an hour.
Right. Get off your couch. Stop being lazy, guys. Go ahead and do that.
Seriously.
You know, unbelievable. Congrats to Morgan Shepherd. That's quite an accomplishment. And also, Metal World Peace. Now, this is really... I don't get this guy. No one understands Metal World Peace, or formerly known as Ryan Artest. But now, days after hinting he was leaving the NBA for good, I didn't think I would see this story, but it popped up out of nowhere. Because I remember Meta saying last week that, hey, I'm done. I'm going to China. You're only 33 one time. I want to go over there and play in China or play arena football. I don't know where that came from. Or coach over there. Do something in China. I thought he was going to China. But now... He has been potentially linked to the New York Knicks. Now, the former Laker was waived last Thursday in a cost-cutting move by the Lakers. And Meta, who is from New York, He's had a long, long interest in joining his hometown team, but denied those claims last week. Again, he said, quote, "I had a chance to play in New York in the past, and I wanted to play in New York when I was in my prime, when I was young, fierce, a lockdown defender, Madison Square Garden. That would have been sick. But right now, China is way more adventurous for me," end quote. So I'm thinking after hearing all of this, I mean, he would be done. But now this talk about him going to the Knicks has rose up, and it you know, I don't know. What do you think he's going to do, guys?
If there's one thing that I don't think anyone is, you know, suited for, it's predicting what Meta World Peace will do.
Exactly.
Because,
you never know.
I mean, he could very well go to China. I could see him coaching arena football. I could see him playing arena football. I could see him buying an arena football franchise. I could see him,
Doing anything.
Opening up a Wendy's or something.
Right.
The list goes on and on. But,
right.
You know, if he, you know, obviously he's a New York guy, you know, the Knicks are his hometown team.
Right.
I feel like if he does stay in the NBA, it'll be either the Clippers or the Knicks that he'll go to.
Possibly.
But I think it's just too hard. It is a hometown team. I think it's too hard to turn down. Although the Wendy's does sound interesting.
Right.
I could see him do it.
There's a lot of franchising options
there.
Yeah, so
definitely.
Who knows?
But yeah, I mean, this is a team he grew up with, New York he's grown up with. There's been constant talks with throughout his entire career about him playing for the Knicks and playing at the famous Madison Square Garden. But, man, I just thought that, you know, I would see him, you know, coaching arena football or doing, like he said, in China doing something. Because
right.
What he was talking last week, I'm like, all right, well, you know, he's gone. But now
yeah.
these talks are as
let's put him on the Pistons coaching staff.
That would be the most entertaining team in basketball if you put Ryan Artest along with. You got Chauncey over there, Rasheed, a solid team. I don't know. I can see him doing anything right now. All right, and a very unfortunate story to bring you all to end this segment. Tyson Gay, if you guys remember Tyson Gay, he is an American 100-meter record holder. That's right, Tyson Gay. He has promoted himself as a clean athlete in the past, but some unfortunate news has come out. He has tested positive for a banned substance and said he will pull out of the World Championships next month in Moscow. Now, Gay wouldn't reveal the substance in a phone conversation from Amsterdam on Sunday, but he said he was notified by the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency late last week that a sample came back positive from a May 16th out-of-competition test. Now, he said he will have his B sample tested soon, possibly as early as this week. Now, Gay is not shielding any thoughts of him possibly, you know, being involved in the scandal and saying he didn't know about taking the substance. He says, quote, "I don't have a sabotage story. I don't have any lies. I don't have anything to say to make this seem like it was a mistake or it was on USDA's hands. Someone playing games," said Gary, who fought back. He fought back tears as he was speaking. He says, quote, "I don't have any of those stories. I basically put my trust in someone and I was let down." Now, Gay, he wouldn't reveal who that somebody was, who he was naming or what. Well, he didn't name him. He didn't put out a name, but he said that he put his trust in an area that he thought he could, you know, he thought he could, and it ended up backfiring on him. So Gay, who had the fastest 100 time in the world this season, he said he also pull out of a meet in Monaco and fly back to the headquarters of USDA in Colorado Springs, Colorado, to be on hand when his B sample is tested. So, unfortunate news for Rudy Gay. It seems as though each and every other day, it seems like an athlete is coming out with some form of PED story or steroid story. So, really unfortunate news for Gay. So, all right, guys, you want to, again, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Want to hear what's on your mind. Comment on anything we've just talked about. If you got any questions for us. Again, we posed the question whether or not athletes should be able to post anything they want on Twitter or Facebook. Again, tweet me, Al Martin, WKAR, or Facebook. It's at facebook.com/currentsports. Want to hear what's on your mind. We will be right back. More Current Sports is coming right at you.
On the next Fresh Air, religion scholar Reza Aslan, the author of a bestseller about Islam, has written a new book about the historical Jesus. He says he was a Christian for a time as a teenager after his family fled Iran for the U.S.
Part of the conversion experience for me was trying to feel accepted in this new country, trying to feel as American as possible.
Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And again, give us a call right now, 517-355-9527. We'll talk about anything that's on your mind. Today we're talking about athletes and the use of Twitter and Facebook. Should they be allowed to post whatever they want? We have a response, a Twitter response from Steven Spears. Steven says, quote, "Chad Johnson is definitely the worst at it. Dropping profanity on his personal accounts. I feel this is unnecessary as a role model." Thanks a lot, Steven, for tweeting me that. And very, very true, guys. You guys follow Chad Johnson at all?
No, on Twitter? Because he tweets too much.
Way too much.
You know, that's almost as big a problem as using profanity, is when it's just like one person.
Yeah, just constantly.
Meta World Peace used to be like that, too. He would go although crazy.
Has Chad Johnson ever been really considered a role model?
I don't know. I think when you're on a public forum or a public stage like athletes are, I think you automatically become one whether you like it or not. You know what I mean? So I mean that could be debatable too, whether or not athletes are role models. We're gonna do a segment on that in some weeks. Trying to get that together. So but yeah, thanks Steven for the response. I'm gonna ask you guys first off before we get into Pick of Mondays, do you guys think athletes should be allowed to post whatever they want on Twitter and Facebook?
I mean, I guess they should be allowed to, but they should also be aware of the repercussions that are going to come if they say something stupid, right. Which happens, it seems like, every other day. You know, it's your life, but at the same time, you represent, a bigger entity than yourself when you're tweeting and doing stuff like that. You are, maybe you're the face of a franchise, or even if you're a college athlete, you're still, the face of that school or affiliated with that school, so... Even though your views might not reflect those of the company or the entity, you still have to kind of act like that because in the public's eye, I mean, you are, if you're a Michigan State athlete, you are a part of Michigan State. So if you say something stupid, it's going to reflect poorly on everybody. So
yeah, true.
Say what you want, but at the same time, be aware that, it only takes one tweet, 140 characters to, totally bring down your reputation, totally just put your foot in your mouth and make a fool of yourself and right. all the people that are around you. So
right.
It's low reward, high risk.
Very true.
You know, it's yeah. I would stay off of it. I take the Tom Izzo approach.
Yeah, me personally, I mean, I do think they should be allowed to kind of say what, especially on a professional level. I mean, they're grown men.
Right.
At the same time, there has to be limits whether, the content of that tweet. If the tweet is talking about the organization they play for and he's bashing a team, like just say a player for the Detroit Pistons is just talking about the organization of the Pistons and you're a member of that team and you're talking bad about your own organization, that's a problem. But if you're tweeting, something that, I don't know, something personal that you feel is just on your mind.
Right.
I think that's operate at your own risk, I think. But when you're involving those involved that's giving you your paycheck and you're talking bad about them, then I think something needs to be regulated there. But, I don't know, it's a sticky subject.
It's just a matter of, thinking before you say, just if you're ever like, after a game, post-game interview, you're not going to just go off on whatever your mind, unless it's something really emotional. But
yeah.
you just got to collect yourself, before you tweet, before you hit that, send tweet thing. You just gotta collect yourself and think. If I want to say something during the whole Trayvon Martin thing, I'm me personally, I wouldn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Because, just because is just going to be...
It's a touchy subject. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can easily put your foot in your mouth. And I think, you know, I totally agree that you have to really think about what you're putting out there, but a lot of athletes just don't.
Right. And if you're an athlete and you're going out to celebrate or do something, just save it as a draft. Sleep on it.
Right, sleep. There you go. Save it as a draft. Use your draft.
It's not a good idea. Just wait. It doesn't need to go out right now.
Right.
Unless it's very time sensitive. Maybe mull it over for a day.
Exactly.
You know,
I agree.
Is this going to be worth it? And most of the time, I feel like people will find that it is not worth it.
Right.
So.
I definitely agree. Oh my! You know, on my Twitter, I looked at my drafts. I have a lot of drafts. I didn't even know. Yeah. It's crazy.
Use treasure your trove of drafts. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Where the good stuff is.
What have you been thinking about tweeting?
I don't know. It was crazy. It was stuff from like years ago about just sports stuff, of course. Mm-hmm. But you know, nothing like I'm not a guy who goes on Twitter and just puts raunchy stuff like, oh, look what Al tweeted today. Oh, that's a little up. No, that's not me. All right, guys. Well, let's move on. Pick'em Mondays. First off, Mike, give us a rundown of where the standings are right now.
All right. Well, before we get to that, let's just do a quick rundown of what happened last week. A couple Tiger series. Alex was the only one who got points on the White Sox versus Tiger series. He picked the White Sox to win 2-1. We all got points for the Tigers versus the Rangers series. We all picked the Tigers to win 2-1. The John Deere Classic we also picked. Al and Matt both took Steve Stricker, while me and Alex took Zach Johnson, who...
finished second.
Yeah, I was very close to that, but we each managed to get 1 point because he finished ahead of Steve Stricker.
Yep.
And then we also picked the Blue Jays and Indians series. Alex and myself also got 3 points for that. So now that leads to today, where Alex is leading the charge right now with 18 points.
Oh, my goodness.
With myself in second with 7 points, and at the bottom of the standings, Al and Matt both with 4 points.
You got to be kidding. So Alex is leading 18. The only person close to him, that's not even close. The second place is 7. You have 7.
7, and I missed the first week of picking just so you can on that.
Yeah, he keeps putting that out there. Right. Mike is definitely salty about that. But, wow, Alex is just, rolling.
I'm not so salty anymore. Now I'm just beating you guys.
Yeah, right. We might have a duet, man. I'm not letting that happen.
Right,
man.
At least we have each other, Al.
We do, man. We're here for each other, man. All right. Well, let's run down I'm about to sweep this thing. Let's go. What picks do we have this week?
Well, we had the ESPY Awards this week, and previously we did pick best moment and best team.
Mm-hmm.
You picked Chuck Pagano as best moment, while me and Matt both picked the Jack Hoffman touchdown, and Alex picked the Lindsey Morgan soccer goal. And best team, we all picked Miami Heat. So right now we're going to pick the best breakthrough athlete, and that comes between Colin Kaepernick, Johnny Manziel, Yasiel Puig, Mike Trout, and Russell Wilson. Al, who you got?
I am going with Colin Kaepernick for this one. I think he was such a phenomenon that came out of nowhere, especially with his background. He's kind of he has a really good story behind him, and he's a great quarterback. Great quarterback. I'm going with Colin though. And the NFL runs the world, so I'm going with Colin Kaepernick.
Man, yeah. All right, I am gonna go with Johnny Football. I think he's almost like a legend in the NCAA.
Yeah.
You know, he came out of nowhere, redshirt freshman, beats Alabama, wins the Heisman.
I think, you know, the reason why I'm going, I thought about Johnny Football. The reason why I'm going against Johnny Football is because of the recent,
I know.
The public is kind of going against him now, with his whole Twitter fiasco. And now I think he just left the Manning camp with the whole mysterious illness.
Right.
You know, I think his reputation, he's kind of taking a little bit of a hit. I don't know if when I look at the ESPYs, I always look at the popularity pick and I think Johnny Football's popularity is kind of being hit right now. But if you look at what he did, I mean, unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the Texas A&M, though, people are going to come out. I'm also going with Johnny Football
in
this
football.
One.
All right.
All right. Next is best upset. And our picks for this is the Florida Gulf Coast win over Georgetown in the NCAA tournament. We got Louisville women's basketball over Baylor. Juan Manuel Marquez over Manny Pacquiao. And then Texas A&M. Over Alabama football. So,
gotcha.
Who you got?
I am going with the Florida Gulf Coast win over Georgetown. That was such a crazy game. No one expecting Florida Gulf Coast to even be in contention in the tournament. And when that happened, I remember that story being everywhere. I remember when I was at 6, that was my lead story, and people were just going nuts in the office and everything. I'm going with Florida Gulf Coast. And I also want to note that Alex has his picks in as well. He chose Colin Kaepernick for best breakthrough athlete. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, and Alex also picked Louisville over Baylor for this one. I'm going with Dunk City. Okay. I remember watching that entire
game. It's crazy,
game.
Right?
Exactly, and just we need to get a track of dunks that you played over as we talk about them.
Yes. Yeah.
Aaron.
He's giving us the evil eye right now. All right, go ahead, man. What you
got? All right, I gotta go with Florida Gulf Coast too. Yeah. Although, really, I think that Baylor Louisville upset is probably bigger. Mm-hmm. I think just from the impact that it had and just the popularity gap between men's and women's basketball, I think Florida Gulf Coast. I mean, that was the story, and it was again, it was how they did it with the dunks, with the athleticism. Nobody expects a small school to have better athletes than Georgetown.
Exactly,
and they did, and they ran them off the floor. So. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. All right, next up is the MLB All-Star Game. Only two choices we got here. Al, you going American League or National League?
I'm going American League, baby.
I'm going to go National League.
Yeah, I'm also going to go American League and that three-year skid. And Alex just typed in his pick.
I'm looking at the board.
Is he listening?
He might be listening.
He must
that
be.
Was weird. I'm looking at and it was blank, and Alex out of nowhere just says AL. Wow, he's copying off. He probably heard me say that. I don't know. All right.
Next is the All-Star Home Run Derby. And for this, besides picking who we think is going to win, 10 bonus points will be awarded for who can ever guess the total amount of home runs hit in the second round.
We are up in the stakes.
Four players. Al?
Yes. We got to repeat this because this could be like the game changer.
Okay, one more time.
Whoever picks who has the most home, like you have to get the exact number right. Of how many home runs will be hit in the second round of the Home Run Derby. You got to get the exact number right. If you do, you get 10 bonus points for guessing the total amount of home runs hit in the second round. I'm going with give me Prince Fielder to win the Home Run Derby, and I'm going with 35 home runs in the second round.
All right,
going with 35.
Matt, who you got?
I hate this. Give me Chris Davis.
Okay.
29 homers in the second round.
29. Alex says he's going with Alvarez, and he says 48 in the second round. It's a lot.
That's insane.
That's I don't know, Alex. You might want to delete that, erase that. go ahead.
See a backspace off.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm also gonna go with Prince to win it for the third time, and I'm picking. I had this number in mind before you said yours. I'm going with 34.
34. Okay. All right.
All right.
All right.
We only got a minute left.
Let's speed through these.
Open
who's going to win the Open Championship? I'm going with Tiger Woods. Don't let me down, baby. Come on. Give me something.
Give me Luke Donald, and I already am regretting it.
All right.
And I'm going to go with defending champ Ernie Els.
All right. Tigers and Royals, three-game series. Right. I'm going with the Tigers 2-1 over Royals.
Same. Tigers 2-1.
Same here. Tigers 2-1.
All right, Greg Oden, free agency. He's going to Miami Heat.
He's going to the San Antonio Spurs.
Miami Heat.
Okay, New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, three-game series. Go ahead, guys. Let you guys go first on that one.
I'll go Boston 2-1.
Yep, same. Boston 2-1.
You little copiers. Boston 2-1. All right, guys. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, Alex Sharog, and Matt Luckey, production assistants, intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Jennifer Smith for joining me, representative from MSU's Office of Compliance. Same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Hey, be easy, people.